thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
109, we're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue on this beautiful summer day. Lord have mercy. What did you say the current temperature is, Kim? It's like 93 or something?
Yeah, it feels like it. It's 52
plus sunshine makes it feel like, I'm going to say the
just
feels...
Just put you in a better mood no matter what.
Oh my God, the feels like is 68, maybe 69. I'm telling you, if the opening day for either of our ball clubs in town is as nice right now as it was, is as nice then as it is right now, or maybe even yesterday, I'll
take
it.
We would take it, absolutely.
We'll take it. I've sat in cold snow for a Cubs game and will for a Sox game this year on opening day, I'll bet you. It's funny how that works out sometimes in February and March. Well, we hope you had a good weekend. We hope you're having a nice day. Olympics are over. I thought the Olympics were just such a nice distraction from the world. And you can't have it any more often than every 2 years or it'll lose its sort of patina. But good grief, the Olympics were good for me.
It's a feel good for me, too.
And I know that for some reason, I didn't know that until this year, but that the Olympics skew old. Watch this. Hey, Violetta, did you watch any of the closing ceremonies?
Negative.
That's what I'm talking about.
I didn't even know it was ending.
It was a thing, yeah. It had started and then it ended. So it's over now.
Oh, okay.
So you can resume not watching it if you want to. Yeah, my kids weren't real into it either. And you don't have to watch it if you don't want. It's funny, though, because the athletes are all young. And
but
the
it's
athletes,
all us old people wishing we could do that again.
My knees. I wish my knees could do that. Every time we see a skier, my wife just go, oh, ow, oh, ooh. Oh, that's got to hurt. And that's them going down the hill.
And I don't think it hurts them, actually.
No, it does not, but it would us. And so we're maybe seeing it and feeling it a different way. But the athletes are good. They're good looking. They're young. You know, the music at the closing ceremony was K-pop, which doesn't skew old. I mean, everything you can. They've got the X Games now entwined into the Winter Games. So everything you can do, I think, to make the Olympics as broadly popular as possible, they're doing. But it doesn't seem like people in their 20s watch it as much as people in their 50s. And that's okay, I guess. Although I noticed on the winners and losers lists, and they come out today for the Olympics, Rose friend Lester Holtz and the NBC Evening News gang are on the loser side because they didn't get the bump that they normally do. I don't know that that's fair to Lester Holt. That's more about the Olympics. But the NBC Nightly News didn't get the usual Olympic bump that they would normally get.
CNN reporting viewership for the current Olympics is down 24% compared to Sochi.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why.
From the age group 18 to 49.
And you had some interesting storylines. I mean, the Russians competing without their country, the whole political dynamic with North and South Korea, Mike Pence and Ivanka Trump being there if you want more than just the games. But, you know, the games had some interesting storylines.
There were. Did you think it was because we didn't do so well on the medal count and people are a little disappointed in that?
What do you think? Maybe that's it.
I don't know. Because you really didn't get a lot of golds and there wasn't these great triumphs for American, you know, skiers that we thought, like the Lindsey Vonns and the Michaela Schifrins. And, you know, you had a few newcomers, but the ones that you were so excited about watching, and especially, you know, figure skating,
right,
the Russian dominance.
Yeah,
I don't know.
On the women's side.
For me personally, I think it's always the same. So if I turn on the TV and it's on, I'm like, okay. But it's not like I write down the time. I'm like, oh, I got to watch figure skating tonight.
Well, it was kind of our habit every night. Get home, you know, have a little dinner, whatever we're doing in the evening, and then let's turn on the Olympics. And then hopefully there will be something that we like. I think they did a bad job of packaging it. That is, I saw way too many guys from Denmark and Germany going down a hill, and I don't know really what was happening.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I thought their packages were very different than the Olympics before, because usually they'll put together the packages like they do for the Kentucky Derby that tells the stories behind the people. And I didn't see as much of that. And maybe it was the time difference issue. I really feel like the time difference made a big difference in this Olympics, because you had 14 hours and you really knew everything
you knew
that
it
was happening.
Yeah. So then how do they cover that? Maybe they drop the ball. You know, in the summer games, you've got guys running side by side. And in the winter games, mostly you have people, you know, skiing or skating on their own. And then we compare one to the other, the time or their performance. Now, there's some events where there's two, three, six of them going at the same time. And I thought that stuff was pretty awesome. But mostly you don't have that. And so I think you sort of lose
the thrill of them passing the finish line.
Yes, that's why.
Get them, America.
I'll tell you what. Go Google Jessie Diggins. She's the gal who out-skied one of these other women at the very end. And it was really exciting. There was three of them coming around the bend. And they are skiing uphill and then downhill. And here they come. And the guy was absolutely losing his mind that was doing the play-by-play. And here's another problem I have, Kim and Violetta. I don't think they did a great job of explaining some of these events to us. I mean, I watched a lot of it, and there's still some things I don't understand. Like if you get points on the speed skating, you get points for winning on some laps, but you only get 5 points. If you win, you get 60 points. But it would be possible for you to win, but not have the most points in that race.
Yeah, like I don't know how many times I've seen curling, and I still am like, okay, hold on.
Okay, I agree.
I have to say this about curling. I am not on the bus. I think that's just how far we've fallen as a nation.
And that's probably the one thing that the kids are behind, because it's one of those, like, it seems like
a it's a beer. It's a sport
game.
You can drink beer at the same time.
Yeah, but it seems like it'd be kind of like a not very interesting, fast-paced game, and I think that's why the kids like it. Like, oh, I'm into curling.
Well, that's the problem. That's something you do at a bar on the north side. It's not something that, I mean, that's the way it feels. Like,
where's the excitement?
I did not see any interviews about the training of those athletes or the practice or how did they get there. All we know is there's a guy with a hat that I think had a beer company on the label, and he was just, you know, they seem like nice guys. I got nothing wrong with them. But my notion for the Olympics is that you've trained and you're an athlete and it's your one golden moment, not it's your golden draft. You know what I mean?
Wasn't some of the curling people, though, accused of doping?
One of the Russians was, yeah.
Right, out of all the sports. And then they're trying to make sense of it. They're like, well, you got to keep your knee above the ice. So I'm like, so what? You need to dope for that?
Red Gerard, speaking of dopes, everybody loves him. He got the gold. He then came back, did media, and then went back and made the finals. I don't even think he knows where he was. He was totally like, well, the Olympics or what? Okay, I'll go. Yeah. That was Red. And I think he's the kind of 17-year-old a lot of us know and like, but not the sort of person, again, that you imagine is the champion of the Olympics. So we've got Red Gerard as our gold medalist in an X game, and you've got some curlers who I'm pretty sure I saw at a bar in Wrigleyville. And that was our that was our medal count right there, kids. That was a lot of what we have to be proud of.
Well, I feel like I missed a lot, so I'll get them next time.
The women's hockey we didn't even hardly talk about,
no.
You know, which was an amazing.
They should have found a way to give us more of that prime time.
Absolutely.
NBC was afraid to put, people watch that at 2 in the morning. If they had put that on with the kind of commentary we're used to here for the Blackhawks and told us that story, I think we would have watched.
I would love to hear John Weideman say, she shoots, she scores.
And one just quick note, the closing ceremonies last night were pretty good. Violetta, they did this, and you should Google it if you haven't seen it, a thing with the drones. So they've got the stadium, and they've got this wonderful ceremony. I'm a sucker for people walking in beautiful winter clothes, the athletes waving and holding their medals. It's just such a feel-good thing the planet needs. And then hovering in the sky was like hundreds of drones with lights that were forming geometric shapes. The mascot of the Olympics, a bear-looking thing, that then all flew suddenly into the formation of a heart and then sort of disappeared. It was so cool what they were able to do with flying lit drones at night. Give them a gold medal, for crying out loud. Okay, it's 118. This is WGN. I'm John Williams. I want to talk a little bit about a question that the president's daughter, Ivanka Trump, was asked in just a minute. Before I do any of that, though, I want to put Dr. Mike Hanna on. If you pick up the newspaper today, you'll see a big ad for the Joint Relief Institute. I do the commercials for them, 708-888-0000, as in zero pain, the people that take care of the pain in your knees. I'm doing this dance event, at, where's it going to be? One of the hotels. I think it's going to be the Hilton. But it's a fundraiser for cancer research. It's March 16th. It's right around the corner. It's like Dancing with the Stars. They call it Dancing with the Celebrities. And at the end of the day, whoever dances the best wins. But really what it is it's a fundraiser. And I called Dr. Hanna because I said, dude, I think I need another appointment. But then he said something that I think you should hear. Hey, Dr. Mike, it's John Williams. How are you?
John, how are you?
I'm doing really well. So the thing is, March 16th, I have just a little recurring pain now. So if you don't mind, I'm going to make an appointment and I'm going to have you give me that injection into my knee again. Fair enough?
Absolutely, John. I just want to say this is an amazing cause that you're doing. And in fact, it's really related to what we do. Many times our patients end up after getting the shot, they're going to event or cruise, a granddaughter wedding or a trip to Europe. Because it's very related to what we do, we just want to take part in this if you're still taking fundraising.
Well, so I am, and I jumped up to like second place in the fundraising, and now I've slipped down back into the middle of the pack.
Uh-oh. No, we would love to take part in this. As I told you, it's very related to what we do, and we will match all your amazing listeners' donations for this week up to $1,000. So a dollar for a dollar. And you know what? If this didn't put you back in your place, in your second place, and this match did well,
yeah,
we can do it again next week.
Okay. I'm not sure if I put this up on my Facebook page. I hope I did. If I didn't, I will. But here's two ways to make the donation. Go to my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. Or go to the website of the event itself. I'm going to give it after a quick commercial break here so you can write it down. If you make a donation this week, the doctor will match it dollar for dollar. If I give 25, it becomes 50. If I give 50, it'll become 100. Is that right, Mike?
Correct. And if this didn't put you back in where you want to be, we'll do it again next week.
Okay. Well, I like our chances.
Well, though.
All right. So, and I know a lot of people really support what I'm doing, and that is making a fool of myself and also raising money for cancer research. It'll go to the Lurie Center here in Chicago. It'll go to House of Hope. It goes to University of Chicago. My friend Lou Manfredini's, I think, sister-in-law is a cancer doctor, and Lou talked to us last couple weeks ago about just how great this work is and this research is, but they need money, and we're going to have some fun doing it. So make a donation on that page right now, and the doctor will match it. If you want to have it doubled, be the first $1,000 donated, and we'll turn $500 into $1,000, $1,000 into $2,000. All right, Dr. Mike Hanna over at the Joint Release Institute. Thank you, sir. I'm going to give the address for folks to go to in just a minute, but you can also find it on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook, and I'll talk to you later this week and let you know how it goes.
Thank you, John. Back to you with you.
Okay, thanks, Dr. Mike. Thank you very much, Dr. Hanna, by the way. The address, by the way, is amdwcc.org. That stands for, are you ready, Arthur Murray Dance, AMD, WCC, which stands for with Chicago. Yeah, I said we cure cancer, but that does work if that helps you remember it. But in fact, that's not what it stands for. It's I know. It's Arthur Murray Dance with Chicago Celebrities, or Arthur Murray Dance We Cure Cancer. Either way, amdwcc.org is the website, and you can make your donation there, or just go to my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John, and the link is right there. We've pinned it to the top. We've put up a new boomerang video of me doing
and you really practice hard.
Fancy dance
even
steps.
Even in the hallways here at WGN Radio.
Yeah.
Always I see you doing your little, I don't know what it is.
It's a quick step,
it's a
Violetta.
Quick step. Okay.
Every time Violetta catches me, because we have these big broad hallways, and so there's more room to practice some of these dance steps there. So when I'm going from one area of the station to another, I'll quick step down the hall. Well, on more than a couple of occasions, Violetta has spotted me.
I've been privileged enough to see that.
And you criticize.
I just don't expect to see someone quick-stepping down the hallway very, very energetically. Not just like kind of in your head when you're humming along, but just full on practice.
Yeah, well, you know, practice doesn't make perfect, Violetta. Perfect practice makes perfect. You've got to work it. You've got to actually go after it.
Well, you're working it.
I have raised $3,739, but we could make that $5,700 if you make a donation today, tomorrow, or the next day. But I wouldn't wait, because the match is for the first $1,000 that come in. I'd love to match your donation, thanks to Dr. Hannah's generosity. $3,700 we're at. If you go to either of those sites, AMD, Arthur Murray Dance, We Cure Cancer, WCC.org or .com, or go to my Facebook page, the link is there, make your donation. And if you do so now, the first $1,000 as of today will be doubled. Hooray. We're at $3,700. Puts me kind of in the middle of the fundraising pack for the Dancing with Chicago Celebrities. All right. We'll talk a little bit about this in the next hour and later in this hour. But let's just get started with two questions that were asked of Ivanka Trump, speaking of the Olympics. So here she is answering one of two questions that were asked of her that was played on the Today Show. It's NBC's coverage. So they get to sit down with the first daughter who is there. She's representing the United States for the closing ceremonies. And so they're talking to her about what events does she like and, you know, just the usual chit-chat about sports and the Olympics in the USA. And she was saying a lot of the right things. Let's start with number one, though. They did want to talk to her about some of the news. So she gets asked if she believes her father's accusers, the women who said that he sexually harassed or assaulted them.
Do you believe your father's accusers?
I think it's a pretty inappropriate question to ask a daughter if she believes the accusers of her father when he's affirmatively stated that there's no truth to it. I don't think that's a question you would ask many other daughters. I believe my father. I know my father. So I think I have that right as a daughter.
What a strange question to ask her at that event, because her father's accusers and allegations really aren't in play. I would be more interested in maybe her opinion of her father's opinion of, I don't know, the other women out there who are accusing men more contemporaneously assaulting them. You've got a lot of those stories. So what does the president say about that? What does she say about that? But he didn't ask about that. He asked about the women that he may or may not have harassed in the past. And
but her answer is also strange, because she's saying, because he's my father,
I support him.
To believe him, and it's awkward to think my father could have cheated or done something inappropriate.
If that were Chelsea Clinton, I think that question still gets asked, though. I don't know. It's impossible to know, right? I mean, these apples and oranges are on such far trees. I don't know what compares to what. But is that a question that Ivanka gets asked, but one of the Bush girls would not have been asked, or Chelsea Clinton would not have been asked?
But it also depends how active they were in the role that they play.
You mean the daughter in the right? And let's face it, she is there representing her father and the United States. If that's your point,
I mean, she's classified as a White House advisor.
Yeah. Okay, so here's question number two. They asked her about guns in the schools.
You're a mom of three young children. Do you believe that arming teachers would make children safer?
To be honest, I don't know. Obviously, there would have to be an incredibly high standard for who would be able to bear arms in our school. But I think that there is no one solution to creating safety.
You advising your dad on this? Do you advise him on other topics?
I think that having a teacher who is armed, who cares deeply about her students or his students, and who is capable and qualified to bear arms, is not a bad idea, but it's an idea that...
Okay, it's not a bad idea. So here's my quibble with the media on this one. She said three completely different things in that answer. She said, I don't know. She said, there's no one solution, meaning maybe a solution is out there, but I just don't know what it is, and there wouldn't be just one thing. And she also said, but maybe it's not a bad idea. And the headlines were, Ivanka Trump says arming teachers is not a bad idea. I heard her say two other things in conflict with that. And I sure got the feeling that she doesn't know the answer either. But that was the headline. I'm not sure how relevant the first question is, and I don't think they absolutely accurately sort of represented her answer to the second one. Thanks for all your email, your text messages, and your donations. Remember, we're raising money for cancer research with this Dancing with the Chicago Celebrities event. It takes place March 16th. I'm one of the dancers. We're trying to raise as much money as we can. And Dr. Mike Hanna over at the Joint Relief Institute said, okay, I'll do it that Amy Kite did a couple weeks ago. I'll match up to $1,000 any donation made this week. But if you wait too long, frankly, that $1,000 may go away. Be in the first $1,000. I'm on Facebook, WGN King John. The link is there. Or visit AMD, Arthur Murray Dance. We Cure Cancer, WCC, or with Chicago celebrities, AMDWCC.com. And the link is there to make a donation. Let's see how much money we can raise today with the doctor's good match. It's 1:41. The Supreme Court is considering the case of an Illinois man who said, I do not want to have to pay those AFSCME dues. He is a state social worker, and he loves the work he does, but he doesn't love the union that represents him. But when you do that work for the state, you have no choice. You're automatically a member of that union. And there's benefits that come with that, but he says, it's not enough for me. Now, the man that's representing him, he has a couple of attorneys. One is Jacob Huber, and he joins us now on WGN Radio. Jacob, it's John Williams. Thanks for joining us. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about this case.
Well, as you say, there are lots of workers in Illinois, and in fact, there are about 5 million workers across 22 states who are forced to give a part of every paycheck to a union, even if they're not members of the union, and even if they want nothing to do with that union. And we're arguing that that violates these workers' rights under the First Amendment to decide for themselves what political advocacy they will and won't support with their money, and what groups they will and won't associate with.
Right. This man's name is Mark Janis, and it's the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME, that he's part of. He is a state social worker. He says he loves working with the kids. It's difficult work, but it's his life's calling, and he's happy to do that. But he doesn't want to, every paycheck, and it comes with the job, have money go to the union. Does that money, though, that goes to the union count towards his retirement benefits? Is it somehow a savings account for him as well?
No, not at all. The money that he's forced to give to AFSCME just covers, it supposedly covers his share of the union's cost of bargaining on his behalf and other union expenses that are not like certain political things like contributions to candidates, election-type activities. He can't be made to pay for that union activity, but it's all the other things, first and foremost among them, collective bargaining.
How much money, then, is that per paycheck for a state employee?
Well, it varies a lot depending on the government employee and the union. For him, it's about $45 a paycheck.
That's not a small amount of money. I don't suppose that's a gigantic paycheck to begin with.
Well, it's, you know, it adds up. It certainly adds up to thousands of dollars over the course of a career. And our argument is any of it is too much if you're being forced to support political advocacy that you don't want to support.
I don't exactly understand why you don't want to support it, though. I mean, you know, they're not whistling Dixie, the union. They're actually trying to get you the best wages and benefits and working conditions you can get.
Well, the union takes positions in bargaining about how much the state should spend on wages and benefits and things like that. And not every worker is going to agree with AFSCME's priorities on that, particularly right now in Illinois. You know, Mark Janis, our client, sees the situation Illinois is in with over $100 billion in unfunded pension liabilities and billions in unpaid bills. And then he sees AFSCME advocating for billions more in spending and advocating for tax increases to pay for it.
Well, and
he thinks that's wrong.
And if I may, the way I read his letter, too, he had a first person piece in the Chicago Tribune. He doesn't like the candidates they're supporting. Why is Illinois in this mess? Because we keep electing these ding dongs. Who's advocating for the ding dongs? AFSCME. And then he sees he just put $45 to the fund that goes to support those guys. And he's like, no, we're backing the wrong horses. I totally understand that argument.
Yeah, but to be clear, if people who don't want to be members cannot be members, and then they just pay what they call an agency fee, which is a little bit less than full dues, and supposedly that fee isn't going toward candidates and things like that. It's just going toward the collective bargaining and related expenses. But the collective bargaining itself is political advocacy by AFSCME, because we see that especially in the state of Illinois, where the issues that AFSCME is arguing over in its bargaining, the spending and then also the tax increases to pay for it, are political issues that lots of people have different opinions about.
Boy, you be careful, though. You're going to cut off your nose to spite your face here, sir. That is, if you make it voluntary and you lose a lot of money, then suddenly the union won't have as much power, and maybe those conditions that the employees take for granted won't be so good. Wages, work, working conditions, insurance, stuff like that.
Well, it'll be up to the union, if we prevail, it'll be up to the unions to just convince their workers that they provide a service that is worth supporting and paying for. And you do see in some places, including the federal government and the Postal Service, where people are not forced to give money to a union, and yet very high percentages actually join the union. And I think this is going to be telling if we prevail in this case, because probably you'll see some unions that have served their members or their workers pretty well will get a lot of support. And some others that maybe have relied on forcing people to pay instead of providing a quality service won't do as well.
Jacob Huber's on the phone line, attorney representing Mark Janus. Who's arguing this literally before the Supreme Court?
Well, we had the arguments this morning, and my co-counsel, Bill Messenger from the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, gave the argument.
How did it go?
It went great. We've made our points pretty well, in my view, and I think the government and the unions had the weaknesses in their case exposed. So I'm optimistic.
I'm shocked to hear you say this. It's too bad that Neil Gorsuch didn't give anybody a tell. I mean, you would guess that he would rule in your favor. He's a conservative, but my understanding is he was very quiet about this and left the bench without really giving any indication of what he was thinking.
That's right. He said nothing at all during the whole argument, and so we're really where we left off, because the Supreme Court heard arguments on this issue in a case a couple of years ago before Justice Scalia died, and we heard what the justices thought then, or at least what their questions were, and then the court, of course, tied in that case because Justice Scalia died, and so now we're left with the same eight justices that were in the case before, and now Justice Gorsuch, about whose views we don't know any better than we did before the argument.
Boy,
so
oh boy.
We have to wait and see in June.
Boy, not to belabor the point, but this is another example of elections have consequences. Donald Trump becomes the president. He gets to appoint Neil Gorsuch, somebody that Hillary Clinton probably wouldn't have appointed. Now Gorsuch will be the deciding vote on this Illinois case, which will have consequences across the country. If unions across the country, firefighters, cops, teachers, don't want to pay into their unions, they may not have to, and that would be, they say, if not a death blow, a big blow to those kinds of unions across the country. And there we sit. I've got more than a few questions and comments from my listeners. Do you have a minute to take a couple calls, Jacob?
Just a minute.
Okay, stay right there. Sun is shining downtown Chicago. I hope it is for you, too. We'll take just a couple more minutes of Jacob Hubert's time. He's the plaintiff's attorney in the Mark Janus versus AFSCME case from the Liberty Justice Center. We're talking about a case that would have ramifications not just in Illinois, but maybe nationwide. And more than a few of you have questions and comments about this. Jacob, I'll just take a minute of your time, and we'll throw a couple of our listeners into the mix. Al, you go first.
Okay.
You're on WGN. Hi, Al. What's your question or comment?
Hello. My comment, I'm a retired and guidance counselor and teacher. I worked for 41 years here in Racine, Wisconsin. And prior to Scott Walker showing up, we had, teachers unions that required that everybody at least pay their fair share. That is, if they didn't agree with what the union was, who we were advocating politically, then they could choose to pay less than that, just pay for the amount of negotiating and representing them and so on. And I felt that was fair, because then you can opt out if you don't agree with what the union
is doing.
Sure,
we've talked a little bit about that. Do you have another question about that?
Well, the thing that you didn't talk about, or he didn't talk about with that, is if that, at least in my union, if that union member that chose not to pay full union dues, or chose, you know, now to opt out completely, they still get represented by the union. If they need union representation, even though they're not paying full union dues or they're not paying any.
No, I understand that point. What about that, though, Jacob? I mean, they get to sort of keep their money while everybody else is doing the heavy lifting. What's your reaction to that?
Well, there's a couple responses to that. One is, yes, there are laws on the books that require unions to represent everybody in a given group of workers, whether they're members or not. But the unions lobbied to have those laws put on the books. They want to be able to speak for everyone. And even though they complain now that, oh, it's not fair if we're going to have to represent people who don't pay, my guess is they're not going to lobby to change those laws. They'll still want to represent everybody. They like having that power, and they're going to want to keep it. That's one side of it. Another side of it is, some workers don't want the union's representation in the first place. Like, they don't consider it a benefit. And so they're harmed by having the union speak for them as their representative. And then they're harmed a second time by being forced, as it is now, to pay for the privilege, the supposed privilege of having the union represent them. So it's not necessarily a benefit to everybody. And in any event, we should all have the right under the First Amendment to decide for ourselves whether a group deserves our support.
All right, let's talk to Melissa. Melissa, you're next. You're on WGN. Hi.
First of all, there is no harm to Mr. Janis by being a member of the union, other than this issue of him having to pay his dues. He is represented fairly as everybody else is, and if he wants to just represent himself, what will happen when he's just forced to work every weekend, or when he's forced to work nights or holidays, or come in when he's sick? Those are all things that he gets, benefits that he gets by being represented by the union. And also this morning when they were on C-SPAN, the question was, what is the view when the complaint is that the pension money is being invested in investments that Mr. Janis or somebody else doesn't agree with? And there was no real answer there. The collective bargaining is a benefit for all of us, for the collection.
All right, let's let him. Hold on one second, because I want to get a response from him. You're making some interesting points. What about that?
Well, it sounds like she likes the union, and she would pay even if she wasn't forced to do it. And so why not leave it up to every worker to decide whether they like the union? Sounds like she thinks it's really great. So probably if it actually does provide these benefits, it shouldn't be that hard for the union to make the case to workers that they're worth supporting, which is what every other kind of organization has to do to operate. It has to raise money from people who are willing to give it.
You know, the previous caller, thank you for the phone call. The previous caller's point, though, was that if the union isn't representing you, if you don't want to pay dues to the union will still represent you. You'll still benefit from it. I wonder how many of these people, though, really would opt out of union benefits if they didn't have to pay their dues, you know, say, okay, fine, I won't pay it, and I'll take my chances. Maybe I will work weekends. Maybe I won't get the raise y'all got. I wonder how many of them would actually take that step as well. You know what I mean?
Well, we could have a system where only people who are union members are represented by the unions, and then we could find that out.
Then there'd be two tiers, which there kind of are in some shops as it is now anyway. But that's divisive. That really hurts the power of the union and the power of the numbers, the millions of people that are in unions.
Well, whether that's true or not, you shouldn't have to give your First Amendment rights up just because you take a government job. You shouldn't have to fund a highly political organization like AFSCME just because you want to take a job like Mark Janis's as a child support specialist.
Jacob, when are we going to hear from the Supreme Court on this? Do you know?
Well, the Supreme Court's term ends in June, so they'll have to issue a decision by then, and they usually save the big decisions for the very end, so I would expect just about the end of June, we'll hear something.
Jacob Hubert, the plaintiff's attorney in this case. What a pleasure. Thanks for talking to us. We'll visit again. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, thank you.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Yep.
Here's John Williams.
That's what we do here. About that, we had baseball on this fine radio station Sunday, and tomorrow it's Cubs and Sox.
Lord have mercy.
It'll be warm and sunny in Arizona, maybe not as warm and sunny as it will be here. 50s today and upper 50s tomorrow, maybe 60. They should play it at the Cell. They can't play it at Wrigley Field. You know, I live near there, and so we go around Wrigley Field a lot. And if you go down Sheffield, they have the wall kind of open there so that tractors and trucks and construction crews can get inside and out. And when you look into Wrigley Field, the pristine grass and ivy vines and dirt infield that you know in your mind, all you see is tractors. And you don't see the grass is gone. I don't know where it is. It's either underneath there or they tore it up, but it's just a construction zone. It's just unbelievable how much work is going on there. They got to play baseball there pretty soon. It is complete. It does not look at all like a ballpark.
Well, it has to get worse before it gets better. They got to tear it up.
They're tearing up not just the field. In fact, I don't think the plan is to work on the field so much. They'll have to repair it. But it's, you know, they're putting in those new suites and boxes. And I don't know if they're going to put in 100 more toilets for the ladies, but they should do that as well. And maybe for the guys as well. Wrigley Field's a lot of things, but a good place to pee, it is not.
It's like my worst nightmare.
Oh, my gosh. Just way too many public venues in this town. I mean, I complained about that at Hamilton. You know, you take your wife or girlfriend to the show, and it's just a shame that they've just got to stand in that long line. That's just the public experience for women that is not for men. That's very strange. It's 210. You know, Kevin Powell was in Arizona covering the White Sox for a while. In fact, I see he's back now, and he's sitting in his seat. Hey, KP, how are you, man?
I'm great. It's good to be back. And you did mention the weather here. It does feel kind of like it was in the desert for the past 2 weeks, where there was sunshine, but it was cool out in the desert. And they actually may be better off playing in Chicago tomorrow. There's rain in the forecast out in Phoenix tomorrow.
No, we might get rained out.
That would not be cool.
No, I'm looking forward to that.
Same.
I'm actually anxious for this Kopech kid's performance today. Well, he's a rookie, right? Will this be his first appearance against opposing team members?
Well, he's been in the minors his whole career. He's never even pitched in the major leagues yet, but he can throw the ball 100 miles per hour. He's probably going to start in double or probably triple A for the Sox this year, and he'll likely get called up as long as everything goes according to the plan.
Yeah, but tomorrow he would. But today he won't be pitching against minor leaguers. He'll be pitching against the Dodgers' best, won't he?
Against the A's best, yes. They're taking on Oakland. So, yeah, that's a good call. He'll be facing major leaguers. Although the Athletics barely have a major league roster.
Such as it is.
Yes, but yeah, he'll be facing, and they actually just getting going out in the desert. So yeah, I think it's funny. White Sox fans were tweeting hashtag Michael Kopech Day, and that's what it feels like for the past. Like last year, there was Yoan Moncada Day. People were, the Sox, Yoan Moncada, he's that second baseman we talked about the other day, John, who was brought over in the Chris Sale trade. Normally, the Sox last year, at the time he got called up, were getting, they weren't doing all that well on the field. They were averaging about 22,000. They had like 5,000 or 6,000 or 7,000 walk-ups that night just to see his debut with the White Sox. So I think you're going to see a lot of those nights over this season and the season after that when these prize prospects do get the call. Up, there's a certain buzz for the Sox fan base.
Well, I'd love to see him pitch, but I'm telling you what, do not rush pitchers. Do not rush a 100-mile-an-hour pitcher.
Yeah, and I think the big thing with him, too, is that he's never pitched what you would expect from a major league starting pitcher. 200 innings, that's kind of the benchmark we see a lot for guys. That's normally the goal, 190 to 210 innings. Last year, he threw 135 innings, which was 50 more than he had ever thrown in a single year. So especially a guy like him, a power pitcher, they're really going to be careful with him. But I think they want to see an extra 50 innings on top of what he did last year. So, 170-ish, 180 innings from Kopech this year. But, man, seeing him up close, like real up close, like the media just would surround his bullpen session. And, you're 5 feet away from the catcher, and this thing is just hissing through the air.
Does it look faster?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can totally tell. And right now I think he's developing. A lot of these guys have to learn how to be pitchers rather than just throwers. Yeah. And a lot of the hard-throwing guys grew up their whole life. It's like, okay, I can just throw it past everyone. Nobody in high school is going to catch up to my 95-mile-per-hour fastball. So I think it's developing changeups and breaking balls and off-speed stuff, and he's working on that. But he's competitive. Like, there was a moment when he was throwing a side session, and we're all watching, and he kind of, his command was a little off, and the manager, Rick Renteria, was like, Copy, you all right? That's what he calls him, Copy, by the way. And he just kind of like shrugged him off and proceeded to three of his fastest balls right down the middle. You can tell he's that sort of guy. He's kind of a bulldog on the mound. So I can't wait to see him with the White Sox.
Michael, is it Kopech or Kopech?
K-O-P-E-C-H. Kopech.
Got it. Yeah.
Violetta, have you seen the reality show Don't Be Tardy? Because this is sort of the reason his fame is that he's dating a reality star's daughter.
No, but I will watch now. What's it called?
Don't Be Tardy.
No, watch the White Sox. Don't watch the reality show. You can listen to the White Sox.
Maybe you can be the Kopech's girlfriend's insider.
Yeah, we'll turn to Violetta for that angle on it.
But it feels like you've been gone forever. He came back with a nice tan. I saw him in the hallway. I haven't seen you yet.
Yeah.
Really?
must have been tough out there. Yeah. I'm looking pasty next to Kevin Powell. That's not acceptable.
Yeah, that's kind of sad if you're looking pasty to me. I'm normally the pasty guy in the office. So I don't want to say tan. It's sort of like my tans are normally a combo of tan and redness.
Yeah.
And yesterday was the best day weather-wise I had out there. It was 70. It was sunny. There was just a little cool breeze. So towards the end of the game, a lot of us were just kind of sitting out in the stands rather than the press box because that's how nice it was.
I mean, timing couldn't have been more perfect for you.
Right, you go from there to here. This is a nice time to be back. You missed the snow, man.
I know, it's beautiful. It's like all the snow's gone. And the weekend before I left, it was when we had all that snow, which was 2-3 weeks ago. And I got lucky because I had scheduled my packing, my luggage through Tuesday. And then we got the exciting news that we've partnered with the White Sox. They're like, why don't you stay for the first couple games? I'm like, okay, you don't have to pull my arm. But I'm also like, okay, what am I going to do with the clothes? You know, I mean, I only packed really, I kind of overpacked. So I probably packed for like seven,
well, they
eight,
have laundry
days.
Services out there, right?
Yeah, but I just, I didn't really, I got lucky. Like I had my last clean pair of boxers was yesterday.
You don't really want to know about that.
Yeah,
but sure,
yeah,
I'm glad to hear that everything worked
out
for
you. Yeah. I survived spring training. It was a blast. All kinds of coverage at WGNRadio.com, by the way.
Good to hear that. We'll keep you posted on that as the season goes along. So they're playing now, right?
Correct.
He's pitching now, right?
He is pitching.
I'll tell you
right
what,
now.
For the rest of this hour, just tell us how he does.
Well, kind three
of...
pitches, three strikes to start so far.
And I shouldn't do this. This is. I don't want a 100-mile-an-hour pitcher. I want a 95-mile-an-hour pitcher. 100-mile-an-hour pitchers throw too hard. The arm and the human body are not meant to go that fast. So I worry about that. But if you have any speed gun numbers for me, I'd love to hear those too.
Well, an ideal start: three pitches, three strikes. Sat down the first batter that he faced.
Really,
Boop Powell struck out.
And they say that major league hitters can catch up with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. You need more movement. You need another pitch. Blah blah blah. That's pretty amazing because most of us wouldn't stand anywhere near that thing, let alone stand in a box inches off the plate, and then have the wherewithal to get out of the way if it's going to hit you, maybe. But also then hit it with a bat. That's really a spectacular achievement if they can hit that thing.
It's probably the hardest thing to do in sports is to hit a major league fastball or breaking ball. I mean, like you just said, standing there, a guy throwing 95 a baseball from 60, 70 feet away, it's unbelievable.
I don't think I'd even see it.
You almost don't. You almost don't. And the idea that you would go, is it high, is it low, is it outside? Can I put my hands in the exact spot? Oh, man, that's something else. So
pretty wild.
Nice to hear you, Kevin. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
Yeah, I know I got that, Elif. I just wanted to read this thing first. I'll do this after the news at 2:30. Monica Lewinsky's latest piece in Vanity Fair. That magazine's been good to her over the years. She famously had that cover story and picture after it was revealed that she'd had that affair with the president. And so now she's in there with the first person piece. And it's about meeting somebody at a restaurant that she had not met in person before. That's a really interesting story. The first page of that is worth reading. We will after the news at 2:30 on WGN. In the Washington Post, here's that thing I was looking for. They have the economics of arming America's schools. Here's the president. Can we just play the clip of Donald Trump? He was speaking to the governors. So I presume Governor Rauner was out there then, along with the rest of them. And this is the president talking about the guards who did not rush into the line of fire in Parkland.
You know, I really believe, you don't know until you test it, but I think I really believe I'd run in there even if I didn't have a weapon. And I think most of the people in this room would have done that too, because I know most of you. But the way they performed was really a disgrace.
He said he would have run into the line of fire. And I know you're talking to your dashboard or your kitchen radio right now about the fact that the president didn't even serve in the military, but never mind that. He also said, speaking about the sheriff's deputies, that they weren't, quote, exactly Medal of Honor winners, and the way they performed was disgusting. For some reason, he felt like he needed to tell the governors that were before him that today. But the Washington Post compiled what the numbers would be. If we go through with, I'll say, the president's plan, but a lot of people are on board this, arming the teachers. How would that work and what would it cost? They say, well, first of all, how many teachers do we have? 3.1 million public school and 400,000 private school teachers in the United States. So 3.6 million men and women go to work every day to teach our kids. The president said we should arm 10% of them, 20% of them. I believe 20% was the number. So one-fifth of 3.6 million, they remind us, is 718,000. 718,000 teachers, in the president's view, would be armed. That is just a bit fewer than the number of people currently serving in the United States Army and Navy combined. So Army, Navy, or teachers, about the same amount of guns. Let's say that we want the bare minimum, just enough to pass the safety requirement for gun ownership. In Maryland, for instance, there's a company that will charge you $100 to train you on operating a gun. The cost then would be about $71.8 million to train all of our teachers. If you want more sophisticated training and teaching, you know, here's how you respond this way, here's how you respond that way, you would imagine it's more than just the cursory course. That's $1,000 per train. According to one company that the Washington Post found, the more robust training means that the cost for our 718,000 teachers comes to $718 million. Say we get a discount on that. Maybe instead of $718 million, it's only $350 million if they give us 50% off because of the number of people. Then they say, now we got to get them guns. So let's say we're at $350 million to train the teachers, and I don't know if we have to pay that over and over again, you know, continuing training, but now let's get them a gun. They consider the Glock G17, which the manufacturer touts as the world's most popular pistol. Those run $500 a piece. That means the price tag of arming the teachers just went up by $359 million. Maybe Glock gives us a discount, and we'll only have to pay half or so. So we're at about $180 million. The grand total, then, if we assume the cheapest training and the discounted guns, would be $250 million to arm 718,000 teachers. If we pay full freight, if we pay retail for the gun, and we get them the best training, then you're looking at about $1 billion. The president tweeted, I never said give teachers guns, like was stated on fake news at CNN and NBC. What I said was to look at the possibility of giving concealed guns to gun-adept teachers with military or special training experience. Only the best 20% of teachers, a lot, would now be able to carry the guns, he said. By the way, Newt Gingrich also has a plan that I guess is getting some traction, and that is where you just hire guards. He said 6 to 8 guards in the schools. They totaled up the number of schools, and if you multiply that by 6 to 8 guards, you're looking at 750,000 to 1 million guards. Again, just a little less than the armed forces of the United States would now go to the schools every day. A 2013 analysis of adding armed guards to schools completed by a professor at Cleveland State University estimated that the school resource officers would run about $75,000 to $97,000 annually. If you adjust for inflation, it would be just under $100,000 a year per school now. That means $63 billion at a minimum to guard the schools. The numbers are just flabbergastingly large, aren't they? More about that in a minute. We'll talk to Steve. You're on WGN. Hey, Steve, it's John. What's up?
John, how you doing, buddy? Hey, you know, one of the things I have not heard, and perhaps it has been said, if so I apologize, is why do we not require a psychiatric evaluation before somebody gets a gun license? You know, I appreciate the president's thinking out loud about arming teachers, whether he said it or didn't say it. But what I don't understand is what happens then when a teacher goes through, you know, some type of psychiatric moment and a teacher starts shooting up a classroom. What's the answer then? Is it, you know, we have all these soldiers who come back with PTSD, and we see soldiers who go and shoot up their own troops. What happens if a teacher does this? So we're throwing out all these suggestions, but there's no plans. Why not make sure a person who has a gun, whether a teacher, whether a hunter, a police officer, that they are psychiatrically able to have a gun? If you need a license to drive a car, if I have to take my shoes off at an airport, I want to make sure the person who's standing next to me who's carrying is able and mentally prepared to use that gun if necessary.
I think you make some interesting points. I don't have answers to all your questions, but I think it's worth thinking about. If you are going to arm 750,000 teachers in the schools, I got that number wrong, 75,000, pick it, tens of thousands of teachers in the schools. If you're going to arm them, are you sure that they are all to the person going to be the right person with the gun in a school? Thanks for the call. Let's go to, I think, who's next here? Ron, you're on WGN. Ron, you wanted to say what?
John, I heard this scenario put out a little while ago, but there's the possibility. Trump has already mentioned putting Blackwater in his government. Betsy DeVos, her brother is Eric Prince, the founder of Blackwater. Now it's XE or whatever. It's based in Kuwait. Betsy DeVos wants to privatize the schools to pay for the putting in Blackwater and her brother's armed security.
Oh, wow.
She's going to private. You know, it's a little far out there, but privatize the schools under Betsy DeVos,
yeah,
put her brother, and then you have Blackwater to be used by Trump as his, because he's already said he wants a secret army. And he mentioned Blackwater a few months ago. So I'm just throwing this out there, John. It's, you know, we've already seen crazier things with this election and the Russians. So what's next?
Thanks for the phone call. Pause here for a minute. Update you on the news. Take a couple more calls on this. That Monica piece in Vanity Fair is fascinating. We were talking about a couple of things here. I went over the statistics that the Washington Post assembled. They said, if we do arm 20% of the teachers, good God, if we arm 20% of the teachers, that's hundreds of thousands of teachers carrying zillions of guns. It'll cost us literally billions of dollars for the guns and the training. So then what do we think of that? By the way, here's the president of the United States speaking to the governors. He was at a government, the governors convened, the president spoke to them, and about the performance of the Parkland officers who did not rush into the school when the firing started, the president said,
you know, I really believe, you don't know until you test it, but I think I really believe I'd run in there even if I didn't have a weapon. And I think most of the people in this room would have done that too, because I know most of you. But the way they performed was really a disgrace.
He said, you know, and we didn't have any, well, how did he put it? We didn't have any gold medal winners of what, how did he put it? Medal of, we weren't, they weren't exactly Medal of Honor winners, the president said, and further denigrating the officers who didn't go into the school. One of them has resigned. I'm not sure what's going to happen to the other one or ones. I don't know why they didn't go in. But if it was terrifying enough to those men who are trained to do it for a living, I'm worried about teachers who aren't trained to do it for a living, suddenly roaming the halls, teachers and other students with guns, and that they're going to take this guy down. That to me is cuckoo. Okay, here's some of your phone calls. Let's talk to Jim next. You're on WGN. Jim, what did you want to say?
I wanted to say that I'm speaking for my son, who is a teacher at Addison Trails High School. He's 50 years old. He's capable of having a gun. And he said him and the faculty would be more than happy if it's optional to carry a gun. I'm so tired of WGN and you especially talking for the teachers. Why don't you get, you were supposed to have the teachers call up on Saturday.
We did.
And what happened?
Every single one said carrying a gun is crazy. They do not want it.
Well, my son and his faculty say he can't. If it's protecting the students and the whole, and you come up with this exorbitant, this is that you're talking. You just says a little while ago having these teachers crawling the halls with guns. You're making them seem like they're idiots. All teachers aren't idiots.
I don't think I'm making them sound like idiots
yes, you
at all.
Do. Yes, my son is a teacher, and I don't like the way you're describing teachers walking around with guns, old ladies. It's optional, John. It's optional.
So
if
20%...
they're capable of having a gun, and please don't speak for the teachers. Were you in the service at all?
Jim, I appreciate your phone call.
Were you in the service? I'm asking you a question.
Oh, God, no, Jim, I wasn't. I hope that doesn't keep me from having an opinion about this.
Will you quit talking for the teachers?
I promise you I am not talking for the teachers. So on Saturday, we said, if you are a teacher, call in, because we couldn't do this during the day. I'm on till 3, and most teachers are working till 3. So we said, on Saturday, we'll open up the phones. And we made a point of taking them in the order they came in. We did not screen out for any teachers who, you know, had one opinion versus the other. And every single one who called, some of them were almost in tears. And as I recall, almost all of them women. A spokesperson for the Chicago Teachers Union told us 85% of the people that teach in the public schools in Chicago are ladies. I suppose some women are quite capable of handling guns. I'm just telling you what I know. Say 80% of the teachers are women, and all of the people that called in to the teacher said that they and their colleagues have been talking about it. They have, and here's what they said. They said, not only do we have to teach and teach to the tests. We have all sorts of new protocols that we have to honor. We have all sorts of new things we have to do, to say nothing of handling the parents and the students and the administration, blah, blah, blah. They said, we are under a lot of pressure here. And now 1 in 5 of us are going to get firearms training, and we're going to carry guns into the school. I am not speaking for the teachers. I'm telling you what they told me. It's 2:40 on WGN. Let's pick up another phone line. Let's go to Ellen on line 5. Ellen, this is John. What did you want to say?
Hey, John. Yeah. Why can't we ever go after the gun manufacturers? We keep putting in all these laws that mean absolutely nothing to the people and the judicial system. Why can't we stop the manufacturer?
I don't have an answer to that. I do know, well, probably because the Constitution guarantees you the right to bear arms, and I don't know how you're going to make the manufacture of something that's constitutionally protected illegal. But, you know, one thing that is interesting is if you made bullets really expensive, if you taxed guns and if you taxed bullets, people are talking about this as an option today, it might reduce the number. Boy, that's hard to imagine, though. Don't you suppose, I'll finish that thought, it might reduce the number of shootings, it might reduce the number of guns that are in people's hands. But you got to believe, don't you, that if somebody is crazy enough to go into a school, that money is not going to be the object that deters them. Somebody else texted this to me today. They said, okay, all of this talk about arming teachers is going to safeguard our kids. Well, then what are we going to do to safeguard them at churches and at concerts and at movie theaters and other places? That's an interesting question, too, and I don't have the answer to that. Steve is on line 2. Steve, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? You're on the... Hold on a second. I didn't hit line 2. I think this is line 2. Hey, Steve, are you there?
I'm here, John.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, my thing is, no matter who you get there, whether the teachers have guns or guards have guns, there's still guns in the school. You got to keep the guns out of the school. It's got to be metal detectors or something that's going to be like that. Or also, if you're... anybody helps somebody bring the gun into school, there's got to be no ands, ifs, or buts. This is what's going to happen. You're going to get 20 years, 30 years, life, whatever.
Yeah.
But you got to keep the guns out. Because anybody can have a bad day, John, and go off, whether you're a guard, whether you're a teacher, you know what I mean? You know, it's we're human, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. And here's the numbers again on this. So if you have 3.1 million public school teachers and 400,000 private school teachers, I don't know what's going to happen to the kids that go to private schools. I suppose the government would be able to enforce this in public schools. But we have 3.6 million teachers. So that's 700,000 teachers if you arm 20% of them. 700,000 individuals that you're going to give guns to that would be going into the schools every day. You want to do the math on that for the chances that something might go wrong? Steve, thanks for the phone call. The latest issue of Vanity Fair, Monica Lewinsky writes the following. It was Christmas Eve 2017. My family and I were about to be seated at a quaint restaurant in Manhattan's West Village. We had just come from Gramercy Park on the one night each year when the exclusive park, accessible only to nearby residents with special keys, opened its gate to the outside, to outsiders. There had been carols, people had sung with abandon. In short, it was a magical night, and I was happy. Amid the glow of candles and soft lighting, I strained a look again at the man in the hat. He was part of a small group that had just exited the main dining room of the restaurant. They were now gathering their belongings, likely vacating what was to be our table. And then it clicked. He looks just like, no, it couldn't be, could it? A student of karma, I found myself seizing the moment. Whereas a decade ago, I would have turned and fled the restaurant at the prospect of being in the same place as this man, many years of personal counseling work had led me to a place where I now embrace opportunities to move into spaces that allow me to break out of old patterns of retreat or denial. At the same moment, I stepped toward the man in the hat and began to ask, "You're not..." He stepped toward me with a warm, incongruous smile and said, "Let me introduce myself. I'm Ken Starr." An introduction was indeed necessary. This was, in fact, the first time I had met him. I found myself shaking his hand, even as I struggled to decipher the warmth that he evinced. The man whose staff, accompanied by a group of FBI agents, had hustled me into a hotel room near the Pentagon years ago and informed me that unless I cooperated with them, I would face 27 years in prison. This was the man who had turned my 24-year-old life into living hell in his effort to investigate and prosecute President Bill Clinton. Ken Starr asked me several times if I was doing okay. A stranger might have surmised from his tone that he had actually worried about me over the years. His demeanor, almost pastoral, was somewhere between avuncular and creepy. And then she goes on to talk about how the Me Too movement has sort of come and gone without her, and how she feels about that, the hashtag Me Too movement. In fact, the headline of the article is Monica Lewinsky emerging from the house of gaslight in the age of hashtag Me Too. And she's still not ready to... I'll let you read the article, but she's not on board entirely, is one way to put it. But how bizarre is that? She's sitting there about to sit at a restaurant, and the chair, the table that she is going to go to is the one that Ken Starr had, and she had never met him. Yeah, that's weird. I guess eventually the chances are maybe if you're fancy people and you're all living in the same city, you might bump into each other in the same restaurant, but that's weird. I suppose some people would have slapped him or grabbed a glass of water and thrown it at him, or like she said, she would have turned and run in the old days. But in this case, there she is having a very awkward chat with him. And I'm not sure what avuncular means. Hey, Olaf, were you able to look up avuncular? She said that his demeanor was almost pastoral, somewhere between avuncular and creepy.
Avuncular, relating to an uncle.
Is that what it means? Avuncular means...
Yes, John, avuncular, relating to an uncle.
How about that?
I don't think she likes her uncle very much.
Awkward.
Super awkward.
Super awkward when you're Monica Lewinsky and the table at the restaurant you're now getting. I wish that just people would hurry up. We're standing here, and it's Ken Starr, and you're now going to take his table. To be honest with you, I don't think I want that table. I don't think I want to sit there. I don't think I can enjoy my meal.
And she was with her parents.
Yeah, she said family, but I think she's married and has kids now.
Oh, I thought she said with her parents.
Let me see here. She said, at Christmas Eve, my family and I were about to be seated at a quaint restaurant in Manhattan's West Village. So I'm not sure what her family means in this case. We had just come from Gramercy Park, the exclusive park accessible only to nearby residents with special keys when it opens its gate to outsiders. There had been carols. People had sung with abandon. It was a magical night. I was happy. And then Ken Starr says, hey, how you doing? How's it going? Sorry about that whole 27 years of prison thing we threw at you. The thing is, Monica, here's one of the things she does say in the article, that she did not, as a 24-year-old, and I've long thought this, she did not, as a person in her young 20s, appreciate the power dynamics. So at the time, she said, well, that was on me too. But no, that was on Bill Clinton. And even though it was, quote unquote, consensual, when you are the president of the United States and that's an intern, it almost, in my mind, by definition, cannot be. She's old enough to make these decisions, but is she really, as an intern in the White House with Bill Clinton flirting with her, and then one thing leads to another? That's on him. So she shouldn't have done it. Lord knows she shouldn't have done it for Hillary's sake or for her own sake or for anybody's sake. You know, that's on you. But she said at the time she really didn't appreciate how much it was a power play on his part to her. Was she really capable of making that decision? And now here comes the hashtag MeToo movement, and it sort of casts a different light on this thing. And that's what she's writing about in this issue of Vanity Fair. It's 2:53 on WGN. Ro and Anna getting ready to stroll into the studio. They'll say hi in a couple of minutes.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show. Three, get ready.
This is the song that I'm learning to dance to. March 16th. Well, you can do anything. Go for my blue. I'm dancing with the Chicago celebrities for cancer research. The Lurie Cancer Center, University of Chicago, and Hope City, City of Hope. They'll get the money that we raise, and we are doubling the donation. By that, I mean one of our sponsors from the Joint Relief Institute, Dr. Mike Hanna, called in. He said anybody that donates today up to $1,000, he will double the donation. So just to make sure it was working, I went online and donated $15.
Okay.
So that is now a $30 donation.
Oh!
And that will work for you as well.
Love it.
I'm on Facebook. I'm WGN King John. Or if you want to go directly to the site, maybe you're not on Facebook, it's AMD Arthur Murray Dance, WCC, We Cure Cancer. Arthur Murray Dance, We Cure Cancer, AMDWCC.com.
Oh.
Go there and make a donation.
Are you wearing a fancy outfit? I mean, what can we expect to see for you?
I am. I'm going to be wearing blue suede shoes.
Good.
I'll be doing a quick step because that will feature the shoe. And then I'm wearing a blue suit, so I'll be doing my whole Elvis thing.
You guys haven't seen him dancing in the hallways?
Mm-mm. No, because our shifts kind of overlap in a way that we're not in the hallway together that often.
Oh, I've only been privileged to sneak peek that.
Whenever I go up and down the halls on 7, I'm always practicing, doing my quick step up and down the hall.
Good for you, John. It's going to be awesome.
I've been meaning to talk to you about that, John. They've come to me and asked me to have a little conversation with you about
Ro's it. Been decidedly quiet about my practicing in the halls.
He doesn't like it, I don't think.
It's the halls. You know, the halls are for all of us. There's a lot of pressure to this. First of all, it's a great workout, right? I mean,
it is. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
It is.
And there is, this is always something, the people who take part in this, you really do get into the competition piece of it too.
I do kind of want to do well.
Yeah, I know. Everybody kind of does.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly, I just want to not forget it because it's a 2-minute uniquely choreographed quick step. There's a lot of dancing in a quick step. Waltzing is a little slower.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of stuff to get in.
Oh,
in
so your degree of difficulty is high.
Oh, I feel like I
your
have.
DOD.
I should get a gold medal as opposed to the curlers, the U.S. men.
But how would we know if you actually didn't do a step right?
That's a good question.
The judges always know.
The
you
judges
would not.
Would, but the audience doesn't.
That's
like,
what
that
I said
great.
To her.
Look
I said,
at that blue
it's no,
suit. Look
it's
at those
no
moves.
Biggie. Let's just pass on that part.
Bruno Tamioli always knows. You would magnificent. babies that love you, accept you, and they're dancing like you are walking.
Yeah, that's right. They do know, those judges.
I don't know. He always throws a little sexual innuendo in his thing, too. It's great.
He sort of comes on to the woman, and you're like, all right, who are you kidding, pal?
Who are we kidding here?
Yeah, come on. Move along.
Did you guys finish up the Olympics at all? Did you enjoy them?
I gave up on Friday night. That was it. As soon as I saw the skier who won the same competition both on a snowboard and skis, I'm like, all right, I'm done. I am officially checking out. Because every time you looked up at the TV, there was curling on. I'm like,
curling's great.
I refuse to get into it.
Oh, I got into the curling. I did. At first, the guy, the Wisconsin guy with the mustache, the one who ended up winning the gold, I was like, look at this guy. He looks like he should be a bowler or something. And then you see the strategy involved in this game.
It's tough to watch start to finish, though. Okay. There's a lot of slow moments.
Oh, my gosh. I wanted to go curling. Play it somewhere.
All right, but here's what I'm going to do to fix curling relative to, say, giant slalom. Mm-hmm. Those guys are world-class athletes who could die. And then it's another guy who could do that with a beer in his hand.
Correct. And you can do the beer in your hand.
I think different gold, sports spot altogether.
I think a gold medal in curling counts for like half. And skiing and skating count two times.
You know how they say golf is not a sport because you can drink while you're doing it? You cannot drink while you're swinging. You can drink while you are actually throwing the mallet. Pull
no,
it, whatever that thing
cannot.
Is.
I'm
sure you can. One, your left hand.
It's balance.
Use the left hand to get the thing, and then you get the thing.
So specific.
I keep looking for the official beer of the Olympics on the side, right in the chair that they're on.
Like a bowling league?
They had a six-pack right there. I got to go. You guys have a good show.
Thank you.